Jazz on the Air. Tune in for it every Sunday at 2:30 p.m. right here on your favorite radio station, WUSB, Stony Brook.
And you're listening to WUSB Stony Brook, where somebody hid the headphones underneath the console, but I found them. It's 6 o'clock. Time, once again, for Off the Wall.
Thank you.
and Gaming Tribe Ride. The program is Off the Wall. Manuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening, where it's getting a little darker every day. And this has been an interesting week. It's the week leading up to September 11th, which will be on a Saturday this year. And, well, every year you wonder how it's going to be marked by whatever crazy lunatics are out there. And we have our share. Oh, boy, do we have our share. You heard about the guy in Florida, a Christian minister, said today he's going to go ahead with plans to burn copies of the Quran to protest the September 11th terrorist attacks. Yeah, because it's written in the Quran that that was meant to happen. Sure, that makes about as much sense as burning a Dr. Seuss book. It really does. Maybe they should just do that. You know, although that would cause me pain as well. Despite the fact that top U.S. general in Afghanistan said, please don't do that, because it's probably going to get people killed over here when riots from other religious zealots break out and they target the outsider, as you're doing down there in Florida. You know, maybe it's not the best thing to do. Of course, you know, you have the right to do it. Yeah, you've got the right to be an idiot. You've got the right to do all kinds of stupid things. But should you? Is that the right thing to do? Well, yeah, he's going ahead. Pastor Terry Jones, not from Monty Python, but he might as well be. Well, the Monty Python has infinitely more taste than anything that these organized religion people are doing. Pastor Terry Jones of the Dove World Outreach Center. Dove World? They better be referring to the soap and not the bird that represents peace, because this sure does not represent peace. Not in any sense. I don't know how the bird got to represent peace, but I'll tell you, Terry Jones does not represent peace. Absolutely not. Boy, that's something, isn't it? Terry Jones. First you have Sarah Palin, you know, and people think that she's related to Michael Palin from Monty Python. Now you got Terry Jones, who clearly is not the Terry. You know what? I don't know that for sure. He could be the real Terry Jones. I don't know what Terry Jones has been up to lately. Haven't heard anything new from him. So, and I haven't seen a video of this guy, so I can't say for sure. But videos can be very misleading. People do change over the years, and you can alter your appearance. So, let's assume for now that it's not the same Terry Jones. Well, there has to be more than one of them, right? I mean, it's not that uncommon a name. We probably have a Terry Jones listening to us. If you're the Terry Jones listening to us, please write to us, otw@2600.com. It would make us feel better. Anyway, to get on to the story, Pastor Terry Jones said he understands the government's concerns, but plans to go forward with the burning on Saturday, the 9th anniversary of the... Wouldn't it be great if the church caught fire? I know that's horrible to say. It really is. It's terrible. Did I just say, I hope his church burns down? I didn't really say that. I just said, wouldn't it be something? Wouldn't it be funny? It would be funny. I mean, nobody's going to be in there. They're all going to be outside with the satellite trucks and everything, watching him burn the thing. Unless he's stupid enough to do it inside the church. Would he... Well, you know what? It's possible. In any event, it just would be... All right, maybe not funny. Not funny in the humorous sense, but ironic if the Quran led to the church being burned down. You know, just sort of leapt from one holy book to another. Anyway, it'll be interesting on Saturday to see just how this transpires. State Department spokesman P.J. Crowley said, while it may well be within someone's rights to take this action, we hope cooler heads will prevail. He said burning copies of the Quran will be inconsistent with the values of religious tolerance and religious freedom, potentially puts the lives of U.S. soldiers and diplomats at risk. Of course, we hear the same argument for many different things, many different actions. Don't release those documents. That could put troops at risk. Yes, you have the right to build a mosque near Ground Zero, but is it the right thing to do? So this logic is used over and over again in all sorts of different forums. But you have to weigh within yourself what really is something that is not a big deal and what is something that could really be harmful. We all have to weigh those decisions every day. Yes, we have the right. We have the right to run that stop sign and not look out. No, actually, we don't have that right, do we? All right, we have the ability to do that. And does that mean that we're just going to do it because we can? A lot of people do that. I saw some today. I'm bigger than you. I'm just going to race through this thing. I'm going to cut you off. I'm going to intimidate with my size and my massive stupidity and my stupid blonde... Never mind. I'm getting into something I really shouldn't be getting into here. But believe me, there are a lot of idiots out there. A lot of idiots. And can't let them win. Can't let the idiots win. They win too often. I guess I should give Terry Jones some say here, some representation. So I'm going to quote him. We think it's time. I'm not even going to interrupt him. We think it's time to turn the tables, and instead of possibly blaming us for what could happen, we put the blame where it belongs, on the people who would do it. And maybe, instead of addressing us, we should address radical Islam, and send a very clear warning that they are not to retaliate in any form. Well, okay. As long as you've made it clear that they're not to retaliate in any form, well, that'll definitely make the zealots in the other religions toe the line. It's so crazy. It's so crazy. We have to deal with this nonsense all the time. And it wouldn't be so bad if people just ignored it. And I know I'm not ignoring it by talking about it. I see that. But it is a news story. It's out there in the news. If it wasn't being talked about by everybody, well, I wouldn't be talking about it because I only talk about what everybody else talks about. That's just the way radio works. So if we didn't, as a nation, as a people, if we just kind of gave somebody like this the cold shoulder and ignored them, they would have no power. He already has the power. We're simply reporting on the power that this guy already has. But if he never obtained that in the first place, if people just, you and me, individual people walking down the street, not the big media people that like the headlines, just the normal, everyday, average people, if we simply said, boy, that person's stupid, and continued walking on our way, then nobody else would take an interest. Unfortunately, that's not the way it works. We like the attention grabbers and give them undue attention, which is what they want, and they thrive on that. They attract more, and before you know it, you have a political movement, which doesn't even make any sense. All right, there is another part of the world. There are all kinds of other parts of the world, and we like to focus on those as well. And over in Europe, as usual, there are strikes going on. There's always strikes going on. Now, listen to this. In France today, thousands of workers across France stage a one-day strike today to protest government plans to raise the retirement age. I was watching this earlier. More than 200, not 200 demonstrators, more than 200 demonstrations. Yes, not just 200 demonstrators, 200 separate demonstrations were planned throughout the country to coincide with the walkout. Workers from both the public and private sectors were on strike, including those in transportation, education, justice, hospitals, media, and banking. In fact, this story stopped being written after a while because whoever was writing it walked off the job as well. But before they did that, they said this. The strike was planned since June as a reaction to government pension reforms aimed at raising the age of retirement to 62. The maximum retirement age is currently at 60, though some in hardship post may retire earlier. You know, maybe it's just when you get older, but that sure doesn't seem that old. And I think you have to be at least 65 to get a full pension. But the reason they're giving for this is that people are living longer. They're living healthier. And it's just kind of funny to see people protesting that. I mean, they're not protesting the fact they're living longer and more comfortably, but the fact that they're raising the retirement age because, well, that's the reason they give anyway. Probably the real reason is because they want to save more money, and people don't like that. But it's just kind of interesting to see how the story is reported in some circles. And then in London, there was another strike in their tube system, their subway system. Services on all but the northern line were suspended or delayed. Several stations closed during the first in a series of 24-hour strikes. Staff walked out in two waves on Monday evening in a row over 800 job cuts. The Rail, Maritime, and Transport Union said the Transport Salaried Staff Association said support for the strike was rock solid. And service was completely disrupted all throughout the entire network. Of course, the people, the management says that didn't really have that much of an effect, but, you know, if every single line was affected, I think it probably did. The unions have announced three further 24-hour strikes for October 3rd, November 2nd, and the 28th of November. The unions are planning, are fighting plans to scrap 800 jobs in ticket offices, and said security could be compromised for passengers. And it's interesting because we had basically the same thing in New York. We had all these job cuts, all this automation of workers, basically replacing them with automated systems, with machines, cutting jobs, but we didn't have any protests. We didn't have any walkouts. We just accepted the service cutbacks. We accepted the rate increases, and that was it. And it's like our spirit has been crushed. I mean, yeah, strikes are a pain. They inconvenience people. You get to work late, or you just might have to go a different way. Life is like that. And they're used to it overseas, but here, something like that happening would be seen as tantamount to treason. And we just don't do that. Not enough, anyway. Yeah, I just like chaos, what can I say? I'm still kind of upset that we didn't get hit by the hurricane. And, you know, that's another thing. I think deep down we want the chaos. We want the disruption. Because if you watch the media, if you listen to people on the street last Friday, when Hurricane Earl was hundreds of miles away in the ocean, everybody was freaking out, thinking that this was the end of days, that all kinds of tidal waves would be coming and winds of 200 or 300 miles an hour and all kinds of horrible things were approaching. If you just looked at a map, you could see that this thing was not going to come near us. Yeah, there'd be some rain. Yeah, there'd be a little bit of gusty winds. You know, it's like an autumn day sometimes. Nothing that major. But that didn't stop us from racing out to the stores in our SUVs and stocking up and running around and canceling all kinds of plans. Long Island Railroad, this is incredible. They canceled trains east of Ronkonkoma, which is basically in the middle of the island here. They canceled all the trains a day before the thing was even going to be near us. I don't know what the logic is behind that. All that does is keep people who live there from getting home. But they were supposedly looking out for something. So instead of having a train run and get stranded and stuck someplace, they decided to beat the storm at its own game and strand their own trains so that they couldn't go anywhere. Makes absolutely no sense. And in the end, we got nothing. We got nothing out of this. I want my money back. I want something. I want some satisfaction here. I don't mean just having my own power go out because it rained one day. No, I mean a savage storm where trees fall down and there's inconvenience and maybe somebody goes on strike and SUVs run out of gas and all sorts of things happen and Koran start striking back at preachers in Florida. All sorts of things. That's what I'm after. It's not much to ask for, is it? We have updates this week. We're going to try to take some phone calls later if we are able to. I know a lot of people are out there. I was looking at statistics. I was very surprised, actually, by the statistics of listeners that we have, both now and in the future, people who download the show later. Wow, it's far exceeds what anything I imagined. And that's good to know. There's a whole big silent majority out there. And I know if you're listening to the show later, you can't call in. It's hard to do that. But that's nothing I can really control, is it? Well, we have some interesting stories, and then we have some updates on various things. Actually, here's something that I think might get us into the mood of the latest feature that we're starting. Yeah, there's another feature starting today. I got a hint of it last week, and we're plunging into it this week. And I believe this is going to be running through September. And I'll give you a hint as to what this is all about. This is a story. This story is actually from July. It's a bit old, but I guess it's kind of apropos. New Westminster Police. And I think what that means is that's the name of the city, New Westminster. I think that's in Canada because that's where the story comes from. New Westminster Police made a surprise arrest early Saturday morning after a man cut ahead of them in line at Starbucks and then allegedly attempted to rob the coffee shop. Yeah, on July 24th, two police officers were heading from the station to the coffee shop across the street when they had a brief conversation with the 43-year-old New Westminster man standing outside. According to police, a short time later, the officers were inside the coffee shop ordering at the till when the man they had spoken with outside walked directly up to the till, threw a drink at the employee, and demanded cash. The officers looked at each other in astonishment that someone would attempt that with two uniformed officers in the room, said Sergeant Bruce Carey. The man was quickly taken to the ground and arrested. It's not legal. You can't do that. All right, and that, of course, leads us to the fact that we are down to the final 16 Starbucks. We've been doing this since January, started with all of them, well over 10,000, narrowed it down to 16. 16, what you say? It's one of these 16 will be the very first one that I actually walk into, because I've never done that somehow. I've lived my entire life without walking into a Starbucks, and we decided to have fun with this. And what happened as a result of just one simple idea of having fun with this, is the station has really gone all out promoting it, and I guess looking for all sorts of publicity and fun around the world. So we've had a lot of people in and out of the studios over the last few months helping us narrow down. Well, actually, the computer is one that narrows down the list, but sort of making a festive atmosphere of it. And it's still summertime, so we're not getting back into the actual drawing and cutting back, narrowing it down to, I believe, 8 will be the next group that we have. We still have the 16. And there's been a lot of excitement. We've gotten mail from people in those 16 cities or near those 16 cities. And what we're doing now is we're going to be... we're going to be focusing on those particular locations. The quest for Starbucks. The final 16 profile. St. Peter's. St. Peter's is a city in St. Charles County, Missouri, in the United States. The official population estimate was 55,500 as of 2008. Interstate 70 passes right through the city, providing a major transportation link. In 2008, St. Peter's was dubbed the 60th best place to live by Money Magazine, putting it at the top in the state of Missouri. The Recplex in St. Peter's is an award-winning recreation and fitness complex that underwent an $18.5 million expansion in 2007. The city also hosts the county's largest shopping center, Mid Rivers Mall, which plans a 120,000-square-foot expansion. Prior to the arrival of Europeans, the area that would become St. Peter's was inhabited by Mississippian mound builders. The remains of a village were uncovered during the construction of I-70 in 1954, and a street near the site was later named Mound Drive, after the mounds built by the villagers. The group of cultures collectively called mound builders were prehistoric inhabitants of North America who constructed various styles of earthen mounds for burial, residential, and ceremonial purposes. Indigenous peoples started building earthwork mounds in North America nearly 1,000 years before the pyramids were constructed in Egypt. Since the 19th century, the prevailing scholarly consensus has been that the mounds were constructed by indigenous peoples of the Americas, early cultures distinctly separate from the historic Native American tribes that existed at the time of European colonization of North America. Throughout most of the 20th century, St. Peter's was a small farming town. As recently as 1970, St. Peter's had a population of only 486. The population rapidly increased to 15,700 by 1980, and within the span of a decade, the community changed from a small rural town to a more suburban community. The city continued its rapid growth through the 1980s, and by 1990 had a population of 40,660. St. Peter's population increased to an estimated 55,500 as of 2008. St. Peter's celebrated its 50th year as a city in 2009 and marks its 100th year as a town in 2000, having become a town in 1910 and a city in 1959. St. Peter's, Missouri, one of the final 16. I gotta say, I'm impressed. I really am impressed with the showmanship and the research from our research department and all kinds of things like that. And this is exciting. I'm getting excited now. I really am. And we'll be doing a few of those today so that we can learn about the places that we might be going. St. Peter's, Missouri. Never knew about it. Never knew about the mounds. Imagine that. People coming here thousands of years ago building mounds, predating the Native Americans. Well, let's see what else we have in the works today. This is an interesting story. Town police say they were tipped off to a suspected drunken driver by the screams of a passenger whose cries were apparently triggered by a fear of a spider on her lap. Boy, that's a bit of bad luck there, isn't it? Angela Cantagianis of Bayside was arrested about 2:40 a.m. on Monday when officers responded to reports of screams in the car at the side of Route 25 in Manitouk. They said officers stopped the car, leaving the scene, and arrested her on a misdemeanor charge of driving while intoxicated. The screaming female turned out to be a passenger in the vehicle who thought there was a spider on her lap, according to a police statement. A department spokesman could not immediately say whether there was a spider, because that's the most important thing they have to worry about. Wow. Okay, these poor guys down in Chile, have you been following this? This is about the miners. The miners in Chile are so deep down in this area that they're stuck in. It's deeper than the Empire State Building, if you can believe that. Yeah, that's how far down they are. In fact, the only building that would be taller is that new one in Dubai, in United Arab Emirates, that they built. That's the only one that's taller than these guys are deep. And really, you know, it's kind of embarrassing. I knew they were building something big over there, but I lost track. I lost track of the fact that they were actually going to finish this building, and they did it earlier this year. And it's a huge building. It's a huge building. It's 160 stories tall. Unbelievable. And I only learned about this because I was reading about the miners. So thank you to the miners for illuminating me on that. It's interesting to learn these things. But think about it. 33 miners are stuck down there. They're going to be there for months to come, it looks like. How would you survive something like that? What do you do to pass the time? And obviously now that there is a way to communicate, there's all sorts of things that we can do, I think, to help them. If they can pass wires down, which they've been doing, they can communicate. I think they should get free HBO. They should get all kinds of internet access. Maybe we could friend them on Facebook, and they could communicate with people all over. You know, they're gonna wish they were in a mine that's away from all the attention they're gonna be getting, because everybody's gonna be calling them and sending them instant messages and tweeting and God knows what else. But the important thing is to try and keep them sane. And I think one of the ways you can keep somebody sane is to say, you know what, when you get out of this mine, we're gonna make sure you're a millionaire. And I think that's something that the mine company can do. They can basically say, okay, we're sorry that our mine collapsed on you. It's 33 of you. It's $33 million. Everybody gets $1 million. Let's just get through this. And I think if you knew you were going to become a millionaire, it would make the darkness a little bit more tolerable. That's just a theory. They're 2,300 feet or 701 meters below ground in Chile, and it's something unlike anything that has ever happened before. I don't even know how you lower something that far down. But they're methodically drilling and trying to make some kind of a passageway where they can be hoisted up one by one. I understand there's still a couple of them that are too heavy for this or too wide for this, and they're going to have to figure something out for those people. But we should think as listeners, as people here, what can we do? What can we do to help make things a bit more sane down there? I mean, I imagine you wouldn't be working in a mine if you had a severe case of claustrophobia. I would just imagine that's probably not a good idea to do. But then again, people do all sorts of things that aren't good ideas. All right, our phone number is 631-632-9872. We'll be taking phone calls in just a little bit, but first,
the quest for Starbucks. The final 16 profile.
Denver City was founded in November of 1858 as a mining town during the Pike's Peak Gold Rush in western Kansas Territory. By 1890, Denver had grown to be the second largest city west of Omaha, but by 1900, it had dropped to third place behind San Francisco and Los Angeles. Denver has hosted the Democratic National Convention twice during the years of 1908 and again in 2008, taking the opportunity to promote the city's status on the national, political, and socioeconomic stage. Denver was selected in 1970 to host the 1976 Winter Olympics to coincide with Colorado's centennial celebration, but in November 1972, Colorado voters struck down ballot initiatives allocating public funds to pay for the high cost of the games. Subsequently, the games were moved to Innsbruck, Austria. The notoriety of becoming the only city ever to decline to host an Olympiad after being selected has made subsequent bids difficult. The City and County of Denver has defined 79 official neighborhoods that the city and community groups use for planning and administration. These neighborhoods' character vary significantly from each other and include everything from large skyscrapers to turn-of-the-20th-century houses to modern suburban-style developments. Generally, the neighborhoods closest to the city center are denser, older, and contain more brick-building material. Many neighborhoods away from the city center were developed after World War II and are built with more modern materials and style. Well-known neighborhoods include the historic and trendy LODO, short for Lower Downtown, part of the city's Union Station neighborhood, Capitol Hill, South City Park / Greektown, Highland, Cherry Creek, Washington Park, Lowry, Uptown, part of the North Capitol Hill neighborhood, Kurdish Park, part of the Five Points neighborhood, Alamo Placita, the northern part of the Spear neighborhood, Park Hill, a successful example of intentional racial integration, and Golden Triangle in the Civic Center. When Denver was founded in 1858, the city was little more than a dusty collection of buildings on a long grassy plain, with a few contorted cottonwood and willow trees on riverbanks. As of 2006, Denver has over 200 parks, from small mini parks all over the city to the giant 314-acre city park. Denver, Colorado, one of the final 16. All right. It's still good. It's still good. And I think we have a couple more to get through today. Because we have 16 altogether. We can't do all 16 at once. But it's important to know the history and the facts about some of the places that we might wind up. Well, we're going to wind up going to one of them, obviously. But it's exciting. It really is. You know what else is exciting? Taking phone calls. We're going to go into delay. And that will enable us to take calls for the remaining half hour if people choose to call in. If there are enough people listening live that can talk to us about various things on their mind, we'd sure like to hear from them. Again, the phone number is 631-632-9872. That's 631-632-WUSB. And I understand we have a celebrity guest who's going to give a station ID, and then what we'll do is resume after this.
This is Robert Coyne speaking to you from WUSB, Stony Brook, New York. Get me out of here.
And we've resumed after that. Did we make it okay? Is everything all right? I think we're back. We're a little bit distorted. Okay, let's lower that a little bit. All right, good. You know, I got to say, I have nothing against Robert Klein, but that was recorded back in, I think, the 1960s. We need new celebrities. We need new people to record IDs and things like that. Why don't we have Justin Bieber record an ID for us? You know? Well, he's got a lot of time sitting around doing nothing. Robert Klein is great, but we got to update things. We've got to update things for, you know, all sorts of celebrities. They're all out there celebrating. That's what celebrities do. All right. 631-632-9872 is the telephone number here at the radio station. Here's something that I thought was probably one of the worst ideas ever. They're planning on doing this, again, up in Canada. Basically, imagine this. You're cruising down the road, nearing a school zone, when, bam, out of nowhere, a little girl chasing her ball across the street appears. Your heart races, you slam on the brakes, and then her image dissolves. What just happened? Two Canadian safety organizations have partnered to install a $15,000 device that projects the likeness of a girl chasing a pink ball down a street into a road in Vancouver. She's seen most clearly at a distance of 30 meters, which is about 98 feet, I believe, and looks like a blur from further away and disappears up close. They hope that this will remind drivers to expect the unexpected, but I don't know about that. It might just make little girls chasing pink balls a lot more in danger because everyone's going to assume they're a mirage. I don't know if that's the best idea. And also, it could cause all kinds of accidents, too. People slamming on brakes when they don't need to, thinking that something dangerous is appearing. Who comes up with these ideas? Seriously, this is one of the ones that I have to wonder about. All right, Southampton. This is interesting, too, because we've been talking a lot about demonstrations on immigration and things like that. And this just happened. A Southampton woman apparently upset with the long-time protesting of two men over illegal immigrants near a village convenience store was arraigned today on charges of assault and reckless endangerment after shooting them with a pellet gun. The shooting happened yesterday at about noon. They say two men have been protesting near the store on County Road 39 and North Sea Road, pretty much rain or shine, for about the last 6 years. A few years ago, as many as 250 to 300 day laborers converged on the corner, and now the corner gets maybe 75 or so day laborers daily. Police responded to a call of possible shots fired. After arriving at the scene, they determined the two men were shot by Gail Gwazeski, who lives across the street from the 7-Eleven. She allegedly fired three shots from a pump pellet gun at the protesters, two of which hit them. Police did not specify where the men were hit, but said the injuries were non-life-threatening. She was held overnight, released after posting $1,200 bail. She could not immediately be reached for comment. You know, I gotta say, you read a story like this, and this is a story of somebody flipping out and firing a weapon at somebody, and I know we all expect it to be coming from the other side. We expect the anti-illegal immigrant, I guess is the best way to describe them, or I don't know how else to describe them. If you say anti-immigration, some people jump on you for saying it that way. If you say I don't know the right way to say it, so there's no way to please everybody. But the people who protest against undocumented workers, is that more preferred? You expect them to be the violent ones. And oftentimes they are. And in this particular case, that's not what happened. So if you don't read about this story, that's a problem. That's a problem that when somebody flips out on the other side, the story isn't covered as much. I haven't really seen much much publicity about this, but it's definitely something that is not right in any sense and needs to be condemned and attention drawn to it. Just like what happened in Bosnia, where a girl was shown in a video throwing puppies into a fast-flowing river. She has been traced, according to the police in Bosnia. She was wearing a hooded top and caused worldwide outrage when she was shown online apparently killing six newborn puppies by throwing them into the river one by one. Police in the central Bosnian town of Bugajno said they had found the girl from leads given by animal protection groups in the country. Yeah, now they're not releasing her name to protect her safety, which I think is giving her well too much, a lot more than she gave these poor defenseless animals. Under Bosnian law, people can be fined up to £4,000 for animal cruelty. It's about $8,000. Such was the international fury. It prompted Transformers movie director Michael Bay to offer a $50,000 reward for the prosecution of the young woman. I don't know how he got involved in this. I guess a lot of people can offer rewards. On his website, the director said, there was a disturbing video going around the news outlets. It's a video of a blonde young woman in a red sweatshirt casually tossing squealing puppies into the fast-moving river one by one. He offered the reward for information leading to the arrest and successful prosecution of the woman in the red sweatshirt and the person who shot this act of cruelty. Why did they film things like this? That's what I don't understand. Do they really think that they're going to get praised for committing these kinds of atrocities? I never can understand that. Animal rights group Flickice filed a complaint to police claiming the girl seen on the video came from the central town of Bugajno. It was originally posted on YouTube. Another animal rights group, SOS, based in Sarajevo, also claimed to have information confirming the location of the girl who was reportedly filmed by her brother. Now, it's interesting. I'd like to know how they managed to track her down. Maybe they had a lead of some sort. But several Facebook groups, pages, were created dedicated to exposing the girl who appears to be a teenager. Users of the image forum 4chan, who recently identified a British woman who dumped a cat into a wheelie bin, have vowed to unmask her. I love how 4chan is turning into the do-gooders of the net, the people who track down the evil people. That's incredible. I mean, how many times does something like this happen where it's not being filmed? That's what I'd like to know. And how do you stop that? Again, public consciousness, and I guess that's the most important thing. Do we have public consciousness with our listeners? No phone calls. 631-632-9872. Well, you know what we have to do.
The quest for Starbucks. The final 16 profile.
Denver. We did Denver. I'm sorry, I just did Denver. What, you gotta give me the right...
All right, Wes.
Do it again.
For Starbucks. The final 16 profile.
San Diego. Not my fault if you hit the wrong button. San Diego is the eighth largest city in the United States and second largest city in California after Los Angeles, with a population of 1,359,132 within its administrative limits on a land area of 372.1 square miles. The city was rated the fifth best place to live in the United States in 2006 by Money Magazine. According to Forbes Magazine, San Diego is the fifth wealthiest city in the United States. San Diego hosted two World's Fairs, the Panama-California Exposition in 1915 and the California-Pacific International Exposition in 1935. Many of the Spanish Baroque-style buildings in the city's Balboa Park were built for these expositions, particularly the one in 1915. Intended to be temporary structures, most remained in continuous use until they progressively fell into disrepair. Most were eventually rebuilt using castings of the original facades to faithfully retain the architectural style. Significant U.S. naval presence began in 1901 with the establishment of the Navy Coaling Station in Point Loma and expanded greatly during the 1920s. After World War II, the military played an increasing role in the local economy, but post-Cold War cutbacks took a heavy toll on the local defense and aerospace industries. The resulting downturn led San Diego leaders to seek to diversify the city's economy, and San Diego has since become a major center of the emerging biotechnology industry. It is also home to telecommunications giant Qualcomm. In October 2003, San Diego was the site of the Cedar Fire, which has been called the largest wildfire in California over the past century. The fire burned 280,000 acres, killed 15 people, and destroyed more than 2,200 homes. The economy of San Diego is influenced by its port, which includes the only major submarine and shipbuilding yards on the West Coast, as well as the largest naval fleet in the world. Due to San Diego's military influence, several major national defense contractors were started and are headquartered in San Diego, including General Atomics and NASSCO. San Diego, California, one of the final 16. And still no calls. You know, last week we did a thing where we asked people if the signal was working. We just asked them to ring the phone, and they did. They lit up all the phones. So I know there's people out there, assuming the signal's working, but maybe people don't know what it is that they should do if they call. Well, there's all sorts of things. You can call us and give us feedback on some of the things we've discussed. You can call us and say, Emmanuel, why haven't you discussed this story? Are you part of the cover-up? And tell us about something that we don't already know. You could say, hey, Emmanuel, this is what happened to me today. I had an interesting situation. Or perhaps you're planning something in the future. There's all sorts of things, that you can do. But you have to call us 631-632-9872 and tell us and share with the rest of the world. That's what it's all about, sharing. 631-632-9872. We could talk about the Google Balls. Yeah, Google Balls logo. What's up with that? Are Google Dots just being clever today? Everybody's talking about this. Google changes their web page and puts a new design on there, and all of a sudden everybody is flipping out. The popular search engine has unveiled its latest logo lunacy, and Google files are getting their giggles playing with the colorful dots. The latest Google logo design is a rare interactive... I guess they mean interactive design of Google's, which responds to your mouse. And basically shattering the word Google into red, blue, orange, yellow, and green circles. When left untouched, the balls settle into the popular company name, which has over the last decade become a verb. Now, it doesn't work everywhere. We're going to try and see if it works from the WUSB computer here, where most things don't work. Let's see, google.com, is it right? All right, we hit return. Yeah, there we go. All bouncing all over the place. And they move with your cursor. It's pretty incredible. Several websites have attempted to unravel a supposed mystery to the logo, which many suggest has a hidden message or deeper meaning outside of being a clever gimmick geared to get web-obsessed bloggers chatting. Well, it's gotten us chatting. Most importantly, it's gotten the call. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Hey. How are you, Eric?
Hi. What's on your mind?
You know the thing with the Republicans being obstructionist and being able to stop, like, I remember like 6 months ago I heard there were like 90 bills, all these bills that they were stopped from even, you know, in other words, this is the issue, right? Never mind, I know the propaganda, they own the media, and it looks like the Republicans might take the House. But, Eric, can I just ask you this one thing about the obstructionism that they've done? Isn't that like so anti-democratic that should be the whole focus of all our concerns? Obama can't do anything because I'm not even sure I understand about civics and how government works, but we know they have this label obstructionist, right?
It's very simple. People want their country back.
nice, Eric.
Yeah, they do. I mean, they're angry. They're just angry. They're angry at being angry.
Some level of the propaganda wars. It looks like we're going to lose that because the right wing owns the media, despite the fact that Sarah Palin calls it the lamestream media. They still own all the media.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that is, you know, like CNN is like a right wing station. Okay, but that aside, Eric, I'm asking you, where do we go? You tell me if you understand it. I don't. They obstruct means they prevent bills from even reaching the place to be voted. They stop it from things can't even come to a vote. I don't understand what, you know.
Have you ever been in a supermarket where a 2-year-old throws a tantrum and prevents their parents from doing anything until they get what they want?
I don't have to call them tantrum.
It's a big tantrum. It's been a big 2-year tantrum. That's what's been going on.
I know. No, but I'm saying procedural. Okay, I remember hearing 6 months ago, like I said, there were like 300 things, pieces of legislation that couldn't go anywhere, okay? So, because the minority could stop them from even, I guess, coming to about 300, Eric, pieces of legislation.
Yeah, they're the party of no, and people need to realize that when they go to the polls.
They stop legislation from coming to a... Okay, never mind that. I know some blue drug Democrats are really right-wing Republicans, Republicans anyway. But can you explain to me how it is they can stop things? Okay.
Well,
Democrats
do share responsibility by not being angry themselves and not fighting back enough and trying to be polite and take the high road all the time. It doesn't always work out, especially when you're dealing with people who know how to throw tantrums.
Again, Eric, 300 bills could not get off. Obama did what he had to do.
Mm-hmm.
He got these bills written and placed somewhere. I don't understand. Is that the House passed them, but then the Senate? Could you explain to me what when they say 300? Let's say we're 300 bills could not even proceed because of obstructionism. What is that?
I don't know exactly what it means. I do know that Congress is notoriously inefficient, and it's quite possible that there's all kinds of reasons for that. I do know that Republicans have stood in the way of a lot of legislation and slowed things down quite a bit, and then are content to blame the administration for that exact failure, when in actuality they're the ones responsible for it.
That's right. That's where we lose the propaganda wars. They stopped it and then blame Obama for nothing being done. When the reality is, things would have been done if they didn't stop it. Okay, man, it's really upsetting.
Yeah, it's upsetting, but you know, you got to try and stay positive and just influence people to do the right thing.
Okay, man.
All right, I know you will. So thanks for calling.
The quest for Starbucks.
Really, another one?
The final 16 profile.
Chicago. Chicago is the largest city in both Illinois and the Midwest, and the third most populous city in the United States, with over 2.8 million residents. Chicago was founded in 1833 and became a major transportation and telecommunications hub in North America. Today, the city retains its status as a major hub, both for industry and infrastructure, with O'Hare International Airport being the second busiest airport in the world. In 2008, the city hosted 45.6 million domestic and overseas visitors. In modern times, the city has taken on an additional dimension as a center for business and finance and is listed as one of the world's top 10 global financial centers. Chicago is a stronghold of the Democratic Party and has been home to many influential politicians, including the current president of the United States, Barack Obama. After the Great Chicago Fire of 1871 destroyed a third of the city, including the entire Central Business District, Chicago experienced rapid rebuilding and growth. During its rebuilding period, Chicago constructed the world's first skyscraper in 1885 using steel skeleton construction. The 1920s brought notoriety to Chicago as gangsters, including the notorious Al Capone, battled each other and law enforcement on the city's streets during the Prohibition era. Chicago had over 1,000 gangs in the 1920s. The 1920s also saw a major expansion in industry. The availability of jobs attracted African Americans from the South. Between 1910 and 1930, the black population of Chicago increased from 44,103 to 233,903. Arriving in the hundreds of thousands during the Great Migration, the newcomers had an immense cultural impact. It was during this wave that Chicago became a center for jazz, with King Oliver leading the way. Chicago is partitioned into four main sections: downtown, which contains the Loop, the North Side, the South Side, and the West Side. In the late 1920s, sociologists at the University of Chicago subdivided the city into 77 distinct community areas. Chicago is one of the largest hubs of passenger rail service in the nation. Many Amtrak long-distance services originate from Union Station. Such services terminate in New York, Seattle, Portland, New Orleans, San Francisco, Los Angeles, San Antonio, and Washington, D.C. Amtrak also provides a number of short-haul services throughout Illinois and towards nearby Milwaukee, Indianapolis, St. Louis, and Detroit. Chicago, Illinois, one of the final 16. And I think that's really all we have time to do today. I know there's a lot of pressure to get a lot of these done today, but we did good. We did all right. So let's look a little happier. I want to thank people for calling in, even though most of you didn't. But maybe next week we'll get more. Our email address, if you're prone to writing instead of speaking, well, use that then. otw@2600.com. And let us know what's on your mind and what's been going on in your world, because we're always interested in things like that. Always want to know more about what's happening in the world at large. Until next time, it's Emmanuel Goldstein for Off the Wall. Have a good night.
Oh, give me a poodle with bushy black hair. Give me a ring and a box full of air. Give me a palace without any walls. Give me a pig and a red rubber ball.